Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Australian Bitcoin Podcast. I'm Justin, your host for this episode. At the time of this recording, Bitcoin's block height is at 727,380, and the Bitcoin price in Australian dollars is 54,800. Today's episode will take a page out of Peter Schiff's book and focus a little bit more on the gold market. However, of course, making it relevant for Bitcoiners as well. And to help me out with this, I've got Jeremy from hardblock.com.au, Australia's first and oldest Bitcoin-only exchange. How's it going, Jeremy?
Pretty good, Justin. How are you?
Yeah, can't complain. We talked a bit about this before starting the recording, obviously, but I'm still not totally clear about it because I don't know anywhere near as much about gold compared to what I do about Bitcoin. So, I mean, is there a way to start this, which is a nice way to conceptually introduce people to what's going on at the moment? Or
yeah, for sure. So I think what we're talking about here is hard money, and most importantly, hard money that you can self-custody. So I think a lot has happened in a very short space of time this year. So I just want to go through a couple of things that we've seen. I know we're probably all aware of it, but it's just kind of good to just refresh ourselves about what we've seen. Because I think we've seen a lot, but I don't think we've seen things get crazy. So let's just look at, for example, the US CPI data came out last week. And you and I know that that's not the most accurate reflection of how costs are really increasing, but it is still the official number, and it's what finance people pay attention to. So that came out at 7.9%. which is obviously very high. But then if you look at, and it looks backwards, right? That's for February to currently March. But if you look at year-to-date prices and some key commodities, crude oil is up 35% year-to-date, which is what you make petrol out of. Natural gas is up 25% year-to-date. Wheat is up 46% year-to-date. Corn's up 24% year-to-date. Soy is up 24% year-to-date. Now, obviously, we have a war.
I hate to derail, but have you seen the nickel price?
Yeah, nickel had some weird short covering going on.
It doubled in about a day.
Yeah, that's
which is crazy.
I think it's a market that's a bit, had some weird kind of. It's a small market. I think one player may have had some odd positions.
Interesting. Sorry to derail.
That's all right. I know there is a war happening in Russia and Ukraine, and it's easy to kind of say, oh, it's because of the war. But there's actually a whole lot of underlying factors that have caused these rises. So inflation is pretty high. In Australia, our CPI only comes out quarterly. So, you know, it's very far back looking, but it's pretty obvious to everyone who drives to a petrol station that costs are going up, right?
Definitely.
But I don't think we're at that point where people are like panicking. Right? So we can see inflation, but it's not like the first thing people are talking about when you speak to them. We're not at that stage where people are rushing to dump their dollars.
Yeah, true.
Right? So it's still pretty early. We also saw Canada freeze bank accounts, which we did an episode on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the first time we're sort of seeing a Western country, basically saying, okay, your bank account is not necessarily safe from us.
Yeah.
People are thinking, okay, should I get some self-custody assets? And now the big one, I think, like a very historically important situation where the USA froze Russia's central bank reserves.
Yeah.
So this is now a situation where you've got central banks around the world surely looking at their own reserves thinking, oh, okay. And maybe it's not like countries like Australia, but maybe what you might say fringe enemies of America, like Iran or places like that, were thinking, okay, maybe our US dollars are not as safe as we thought they were. So these countries will be looking at, how do we get some hard assets that will prevent us from having counterparty risk? And the only two options really are gold, physical gold in their country. So that's the only asset that's been protected for Russia is the gold that's in their country or Bitcoin. And what I'm finding that's quite interesting is that, and this happened after COVID, already the main retailers of silver in Australia, they've run out of the low premium silver. So you still can get silver coins, but you're paying like a 10% premium over what they should be for the ability to self-custody.
Gotcha.
So if you want to start self-custodying small amounts of money, because you can't really do that effectively with gold. You want to put away a certain amount of your salary per week. Silver is a relatively good way to do it if you don't, you're not sure about Bitcoin. But before, and this is why I was talking about inflation before, we're not at that point of panic stations with inflation. And yet the silver is starting to run out. And I don't think it'll be that long before the gold runs out, because the way these big refiners work, they refine into very large bars, like a kilo bar, which is $88,000 at the moment.
Yeah.
Which,
out of a lot of people's price range.
Absolutely. Especially if you want to put every salary, put a bit of money into it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So it's just completely not practical. So they have another factory that takes those large bars and converts them into smaller bars.
Gotcha.
That factory has a capacity, right? They do it in batches. And so if they're doing one product, they're not doing another. So what they do is they prioritize the higher margin products. And, you know, if they sell out of all their products, then there's nothing left. They can't just easily increase the capacity. So what I expect will happen is that people are going to realize, the banks are going to, I think, focus on gold because that is still like a traditionally accepted currency. And it's a recognized asset. But the individuals will need to start thinking about gold, silver, and Bitcoin. But it looks to me like the gold and silver is not going to be there.
Yeah.
So if you actually want to self-custody, the silver is starting to not be there. Excuse me. And I think the gold will also not be there. And this is quite an interesting development because to me, it is so early in what I'm seeing coming. You know, like if we've talked before about used cars. In America, used cars are up 41% year on year.
Yeah.
You know, here I'm hearing anecdotal stories of sort of 33%.
That's right.
Increases in used cars.
Yeah.
You know, not a new car.
Yeah. I mean, that blows my mind. And I don't mean to like dwell on a pretty basic point, but it's just who in their lifetime, like everyone knows the saying of like, as soon as you drive a car out of the car yard, it depreciates by 30% or 25%, you know, whatever it was. And that's very normal. We all understand that when buying a car, it is not an investment. It is something that you need for utility. However, now it seems like a pretty good investment. It's like it's another hard asset that you can use, which is just, it's sort of mind-blowing really, but you can't unwind that. That has to keep going that direction, which just means that, yeah, cars are now an asset class. they could always be considered an asset, but you wouldn't often save your money in a car, whereas now it's actually better to save your money in a car than it is in actual currency, like fiat currency, which is just, yeah, a bit mind-blowing to me.
It is. I think that's the right word. It's a bit crazy. And like crazy things are happening now. And sometimes it's hard to see how important they were in the present. But when you look back, you're like, oh, that was a sign that was important.
Yeah.
But the reason, you know, I think it's really important that we're doing this episode now is because the time to act is now before it gets crazy. And I'll just give you an example of how potentially fast this could happen. And I've just got the chart of the M1 supply, money supply of the Australian dollar. And like we felt this was so important. It's on the front page of the Hardblock website.
Mm.
But you look at the way that that's increased. So it's 1.5 trillion is roughly what the money supply is now in Australia. It took 50 years for the first half trillion to go from where it started to a half a trillion. Took 50 years to go from half a trillion to 1 trillion to 8 years. To go from 1 trillion to 1.5 trillion took 2 years.
Mm.
So you're seeing a trend there, right?
That's
so the
it.
Next half a trillion is probably going to happen in under 1 year.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not that far away. So it could be that we see some pretty crazy things happen that we wouldn't, it's, you know, hard to imagine now. In the next, you know, 6 months, 3 months.
That's right.
And I think, I think it was Hemingway that said about bankruptcy that it happens gradually than suddenly.
Yes.
But the key thing is you want to be prepared before the suddenly. Because once something happens where there's the world kind of changes its view, it's too late.
Absolutely.
And the thing I'm thinking about is, okay, fine, so you can't get silver, but, you know, we do believe Bitcoin is the best long-term hedge. But what about hardware wallets? What about metal seed backup devices, or maybe you want a safe?
Yeah.
Those things, again, have limited supply chains. These companies are relatively small, like companies like Ledger and Trezor. They're not huge companies like Apple. They don't have massive supply chains where they can supply everyone in the world with a hardware wallet. So if you want to be self-custody, which, you know, we all strongly recommend, I think it's really important that people start thinking about it now and get themselves set up. So whatever the setup they want to do, I'd get that in orders now.
Yeah.
So you've got your hardware wallet, you can start playing with it and testing it out before you have to start putting your entire, you know, potentially life savings in it, if you've got a lot of cash, for example.
That's right. And it's a really good point because you see, you know, the bank run episode, we touched on this a little bit. And even since then, there's been plenty of more news from both Russia and Ukraine about their banks limiting. So their private banks limiting how much citizens can withdraw. And I mean, they're not alone in that. This happened many times in history. So anyone who thought, once I get confirmation that shit is really hitting the fan, then I'll do something about it. Then I'll self-custody my dollars. Then I'll look for some harder assets. Then I'll look for some way that I can get those assets out of the country. And at that point, it's too late. Some people can't even withdraw their money from the bank. And even if they could, then going and getting a self-custody asset like silver or gold, it's sounding, you know, less and less possible. Even in some of those countries, Bitcoin was at a markup of around 50% in Russia. So basically waiting until the bad stuff happens is not the best way to prepare. You know, you got to prepare first, which means you are taking a risk that it never happens. But with the way that the world is going, it certainly seems like that is becoming a lower and lower risk. Seems more and more likely that bad things will continue to happen in terms of, bank bail-ins or bank runs or even debt crises and in things like inflation.
Yeah, so we didn't even talk about price. This was all about supply chain and actually being able to buy these assets. Let's think about price. So gold is a $10 trillion roughly asset class.
Yep.
Bitcoin's about a $1 trillion asset class.
Yeah.
So you can imagine if the same amount of money is going into one or either of those, Bitcoin is going to move very fast. But I think all of them are going to move very fast. Gold, silver, Bitcoin.
Mm.
I think people are going to be blown away by once the central banks and then the average person realizes that this is where all of the money, like this is the hard asset where all of the wealth, bonds and cash has to go.
Yeah.
They're going to be blown away by how fast they move.
I'm just curious. This might put us on a bit of a tangent, but I know it's sort of related to this. One of the hypotheses or the theories, I guess, that I've heard in both the gold and the silver markets is that the reason the price has remained so low over the last, however you want to draw back, 50 years or something, is because of a lot of the paper trading. So people trading futures, which are not settled with physical gold or silver, so not spot ETFs, but just other futures-based ETFs. And that allows, say, if someone wanted to manipulate the market and suppress the price, they could do that because it's like fractional reserve banking. You know, you can buy and short more gold paper than you could the actual gold because it's, yeah. Is there any truth to that? Is there any, does that seem to be playing into it here?
I think that definitely is true.
Mm.
So the gold is very leveraged and silver is even more leveraged. So what I mean by that is that essentially they can create as many contracts to sell as they want. There's no limit to that. And as long as no one pulls the physical metal out, that can keep going. But as soon as the physical metal starts leaving the warehouses, eventually they'll come to a point where they can't supply it.
Yeah.
And then the whole, it's basically London and, the COMEX, which I think is in New York, those are the two main global exchanges where you can, you know, buy and trade physical metal. A lot of what has been happening is people, they'll buy some metal, but it won't actually leave the vaults in the exchange.
Yeah.
Except for, and this happens more in silver, silver is actually required for a lot of industrial processes. You know, electric cars need a lot of silver. Your phone has silver in it. It's a very good electrical conductor. So the thing that I think will break that system is when countries start to realize that actually they want to have the gold in their country.
Yeah.
They're like, no, Bank of England, we don't trust you to store it anymore. Please ship it to us. And this is what happened in 1971 when Nixon entered the gold window. France sent a destroyer ship from their navy to pick up their gold. And he said no. But I think what's going to happen here, something like that is going to happen where a medium-sized country decides to pull their gold out of one of these places. And we talked about fractional reserve banking, you know, for banks, which is like in Australia, about 22 to 1. I think the gold is probably closer to 100 and the silver, people don't even really know. It's, you know, it could be 500 to 1. So it doesn't take a lot of this metal coming out for that system to become really precarious.
Yeah, just to put those numbers in on a different basis. So in Australia, the fractional reserve is 4.5%, which you're right, is like that 22% leverage, 22 times leverage, sorry. So if 4.5% or more of the wealth were to be withdrawn from banks, there is no more cash left in banks to be able to service the remainder of the deposits. And what we're saying with gold and silver, if that leverages up to, what did you say, 100 times for gold?
Yeah, potentially.
And even more difficult for silver because, yep. I mean, no one's done an audit for however long on a lot of these places. That is a much smaller percentage. You're talking about, less than 1% in some cases. If a country decided to say, I'm going to take custody of my gold, that leaves, not enough gold to go to service the rest of the paper commitments, the IOUs. So it's essentially like another type of bank run, but occurring in the gold market or the silver market.
Yeah, so it is a bank run. It's a proper bank run with real money.
But with real money, exactly, currency, fiat currency, which is not actual money. Yeah, true. That's right.
Yeah, so I mean, essentially these contracts, the banks can write contracts to sell it, so they're effectively short. So if the price rises too far, they're going to have to buy some gold to fulfill those contracts.
Yeah.
So I think the short covering potentially could create a very sharp price rise in both gold and silver.
Sorry to interrupt, but and it's pretty much based on that same premise as a fractional reserve banking system, where it's just on the hypothesis, like the theory, that the majority of people, or not even the majority of people, that a very, very small percentage of people would not come looking for their deposit or their gold at that point, which is really just based on the other underlying assumption that the world would be relatively stable and people won't want self-custodied assets, which seems to be becoming less and less of a valid hypothesis, at least to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing is you kind of see the weaknesses of gold and silver in that system because it's not very convenient to transport. And especially in an environment where you don't trust, like who do you get to insure it?
Yeah.
You know, do you go to Lloyd's of London to insure your gold? Probably not if you're not English. And so you've got to actually ship it to your location where there's a risk that it might get lost or, you know, a fire jet might shoot down your plane. Or
something. Yeah, that's right.
You know, and there's not actually a payment rail. So it's got the store of value asset, but there's no payment rail for it. So once you've got it, then what do you do? How do you settle your trade deficits and that sort of thing? So
that's right.
So I actually do think gold and silver are going to have more of a role in the short term when I'm talking, you know, like years.
Mm.
But I think people will eventually realize, well, it's not very good to have a store of value asset that doesn't have a payment rail. When you've got Bitcoin just sitting there with all the technology ready to go that enables you to trustlessly settle your global payment, you know, bills. If you're going to buy some oil from somewhere, you can just send them some Bitcoin in an hour or whatever.
That's right, yeah.
You can kind of see like just Bitcoin is just waiting for people to figure it out. And I think it will take maybe longer than people realize. I think we are going to spend some time going back to gold for a little bit.
Mm.
And then once we'll get through that and people will just think, oh, Bitcoin has, it solves all the problems that we need to be solved.
That's true. And there's sort of two things playing out. There's that institutional level, which you could even say is like a nation state level, which obviously they would hold a whole lot more gold and have the problems that comes with that in terms of transporting, securing, you know, paying debts in it. But then there's the individual level, like, you know, most of the people that would probably listen to this would be, yeah, just citizens, people in a family, people looking after their own wealth. And to me, one of the best parts about Bitcoin is that you can dollar cost average into it. You can buy a very small amount. You can buy, we say, you know, as little as $1, but technically you can buy less than $1 if you find the right place for it. Whereas you couldn't really do that with something like gold or silver if you wanted to start preparing now. I mean, if you've got enough to buy whatever is available in terms of gold physically, then sure, that might be something that you consider. But I know a lot of people would be looking at that saying, well, I've got to wait 6 months until I can get my first bit of gold or 3 months or whatever it might be. In the meantime, you can be, you know, storing your wealth in Bitcoin and also knowing that it's got that additional utility in the fullness of time in terms of like transferability, instant settlement globally, et cetera, that that gold doesn't quite have, or silver.
Yeah. And when you order gold, you pay $20 or $30 of shipping.
Yeah,
unless you want to walk down to the shop and you happen to live near one. So, you know, you could be buying $30 of Bitcoin with that shipping cost.
Yeah.
You know, so Bitcoin is much, much better if you want to put, because I think what's going to happen, unfortunately, because it's not something I'm looking forward to, is our money is going to start devaluing so much that every month will count. And when that happens, basically when you get paid, you're going to want to put it into a hard asset. And so you're not going to have to be able to wait until you can consolidate it into, you know, a kilo of silver or half an ounce of gold or like some larger amount where you can kind of justify paying that $30 shipping fee.
Mm.
You're going to want to put it into a hard asset straight away. And only Bitcoin allows you to do that and allows people to come in at scale. Because I think not only are we sort of relying on manufacturing processes to make, you know, gold and silver coins, humans are just shipping those, you know, packaging them up and putting shipping labels on them. There's only so many people in these shops that can, you know, process all those orders. With, you know, a website, there's multiple exchanges, has a much, much higher throughput capacity in terms of accepting orders.
Mm.
And especially like once you've kind of like with us, once you've set up your account, you don't actually even have to log into the order. You just can do that automatically. So I think people are going to slowly figure out that actually, you know, this new world that we live in where our currency is kind of maybe not even lasting a month in terms of holding its value, they'll learn to operate in a two currency or maybe a three currency system.
Yeah.
And I think they will just, yeah, they'll figure out you have to just put it into Bitcoin straight away.
That's right. Look, I would even, not to sound like a catastrophizer, but I would even argue we might be at that point now. Like if you go by the CPI, it doesn't sound that bad. Like Australia's CPI is what, 3.5%?
Yeah.
But when you look at things like a used car going up 33% a year, or if you look at property prices, which would probably be around 25% on average per year, if you divide that by month, you're looking at like a couple of percent per month of your wealth that you lose. And most people would say, I don't want to pay another couple of percent in tax. I don't want to just like give away or lose a couple of percent for no reason. So to lose that to inflation, you know, starts to become kind of an untenable situation, especially when you get to the end of the year and that amount really starts to stack up, compounding interest, you know, or not, even if it's just additive, it's still going to be a decent amount of your wealth that you lose. So yeah, I would argue that now would be the time to start thinking about these things, certainly, and even to start putting a little bit of your funds aside for something that is a harder money.
Yeah, it certainly seems that we are from a statistical point of view, but I don't think we're there from not even close, to be honest, from a population understanding of it, if I can put it that way.
Yeah, true. That's right. Yeah, the sort of psychological or the market element to it, which takes like most people understanding it, being aware of it and acting on it. Yeah, we're not there. You're right.
Yeah, and I think it's when it's like the first headline in the news is about inflation.
Yep.
And, you know, you're out in the street and everyone's talking about, you know, last year and the year before, everyone was talking about COVID.
Yes.
I feel like this year, I hope it's a while away, but it may be only a few months away, where everyone's just talking about buying food. And, you know, we're potentially the price of wheat, I've heard, is going to go up 4 times this year. You know, that means you're like $20 loaves of bread, potentially. Like, it's kind of scary. And I think once that happens and there's that mass panic, people will just, be rushing for everything. So,
yeah, look, I mean, it's sort of a funny example, but also probably wasn't that funny at the time. But when COVID started and we had the, you know, toilet paper shortage in Australia, and the toilet paper companies were saying there isn't a shortage, there is more than enough to go around.
Yeah.
But there was enough information going around on both social media and corporate media saying that there could be a toilet paper shortage. And just that alone is psychologically enough to stimulate people to go and buy as much toilet paper as they can. There was literally fist fights in stores over toilet paper that were recorded and put online. So it's just, it can get pretty out of control if something is something probably as unnecessary as toilet paper compared to something like food or fuel to keep ourselves warm or to, you know, be able to go places and do things. Yeah, I can see that taking off really, really quickly as soon as you see that first headline or that first story within a family or in a friendship group. That's the kind of motivation that people need. Or maybe not need, but that's the kind of motivation that you know will drive people to do these extreme things.
And then imagine that sort of so toilet paper is a product that you can buy in every supermarket and every convenience store in the whole of Australia, right? It's a very
prolific.
Yeah, it's a very good supply chain, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Still, it didn't work.
Yes.
Now imagine that sort of panic going into hardware wallet, or you know, or maybe silver coins. Like it's just
that's
it's
right.
not going to last an hour. And I think. One of the you often post those memes that show that when Bitcoin's $100,000, everyone wants to buy it. When it's $30,000, no one wants to buy it.
Yeah,
this is one of those times where you really want to buy it before it's $100,000.
That's
because
right.
Because when it is, it's going to be so much harder to buy. It's obviously going to be more expensive, but you won't be able to buy the equipment that goes with it.
True.
It'll probably be a lot harder to get customer service at exchanges because they'll be overwhelmed with new customers. And like you said, there might be a chance where we have restrictions on taking our money out of the banks. Even I mean, I hope that doesn't happen in Australia, but. It's not out of the question, I don't think.
And yeah, it's a really good point because, I mean, just some very, very basic economics, supply and demand will normally influence price. Given that Bitcoin has a fixed supply, really its price is more of a function of the demand for it. And it's pretty accurate at telling that because it trades, you know, 24/7. So if the price is going to move, it's going to move quickly in a circumstance that we're talking about because the supply won't change. There won't be any additional Bitcoin made available for people if all of a sudden the demand for it doubles or triples or goes 10 times or 100 times because nation states are, or not just nation states, but like the citizens within those nation states are looking for hard money. So it'll happen quickly when it does happen, which probably sounds obvious because most of Bitcoin's price movements upwards have happened quite quickly. But I think we're reaching that point of a supply crunch and the right kind of global macroeconomic conditions and maybe even the psychological conditions of people becoming aware of these things that will create like the perfect storm for a ridiculous move upwards in price, which really prices a lot of people out of the market, perhaps, if they're not thinking about this stuff and preparing for it now.
Yeah, definitely. And then you kind of touched on the Bitcoin being always available. That could be important. Like if something breaks on a Friday night, you know, some places won't let you buy bullion on the weekend. So you might miss 2 days of price movement, whereas Bitcoin, you could just get in straight away and, you know, get that price locked in.
That's very true. I mean, as a bit of a side tangent, I don't really dabble too much in stocks because Bitcoin's my thing, but sometimes you're forced to with things like superannuation funds. But it's always been a bit of a complaint of mine when I get to Friday night, I've made a decision to buy something, I put in an order, but you know, you really just have to wait and you have no idea what everyone else is thinking and doing behind the scenes during those couple of days. And then of course, as soon as the market opens, your order is like a little bit too low and you miss out on it. And you have to go back and check, of course. So it just takes a lot more involvement than saying, I'm just going to go buy some Bitcoin now. And within a couple of minutes, you bought your Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And you've self-custodied it if you want as well. You don't even have someone else holding it for you. It's not an IOU. You have it yourself.
Yeah. And then, you know, not to overly plug us, but you know, with us, you can do it like seamlessly. You don't even have to really do anything. To me, like the purpose of having this discussion, it's not just a promotion for Hardblock. It's really about just warning people, like start doing something before this becomes a problem.
Absolutely.
Before you can't easily do something about it.
I think something, it's like a psychological concept, of course, is that we don't want to make any big risks that are unfamiliar to us. And obviously a situation where you might have like a bank run or a debt default or hard money becoming inaccessible, that's not something that is very familiar to people.
No.
So most people aren't willing to make any life-changing decisions, like even putting a little bit of money aside to prepare for that. But it's really unfortunate because that's really what's required. And I mean, no one's saying put all your money in Bitcoin. I mean, I might say that if you talk to me personally, but in the meantime, just get off zero. Get 1% of your wealth in Bitcoin. Get 0.5% of your wealth in Bitcoin if you want, because in a circumstance like we're talking about, that 1% or 0.5% could become 50% of your portfolio very, very quickly. And the idea being, you're now at least protected for, you're hedged for something catastrophic like this happening. But the way the human mind works is, you know, we don't want to get out of our comfort zone too much, especially if it doesn't seem likely, if it doesn't seem that familiar, if we haven't seen it in our own history, even if we've read about it before, it seems very kind of far off. But yeah, this stuff happens very quickly when it does. So you want to prepare now, not just think about preparing when that eventually happens.
Yeah. And I think, like, just further to that, it's not just about getting the Bitcoin, it's about doing your first Bitcoin transaction. If you've never done one before, we talked before, there are many wallets. I've used Wasabi, there's others that you'd be able to recommend that allow you to just quite easily change to the test network.
Yep.
You can go get some test Bitcoin and just send it around.
Absolutely.
Or you could just, you know, buy a couple of dollars of Bitcoin and just do a few transactions with money that you're willing to lose. You know, it's a very well-designed system, so you shouldn't lose it, but you need to have that confidence.
Definitely.
So I think even if you're not really prepared to put all the money in, have your system set up so that on the day that you decide to do it, you can just go do it. You don't have
seamlessly
to, like, you know, when everyone's panicking, all of a sudden do your first ever Bitcoin transaction.
It's the worst time to do it. Very stressful. Interestingly, we will have a podcast episode coming out around the same time as this one around wallets, where we talk about desktop wallets and mobile wallets. There's some user-friendly options in there, as in for beginners, and there's some more advanced wallet options in there as well. So maybe check out that wallet episode if you're keen to know what would be useful. Just off the top of my head, Sparrow Wallet, Wasabi Wallet are both good for testnet. Advanced wallets like Samurai Wallet are good for being able to use testnet, but that's Android only. So something like Sparrow would probably be a good one for desktop users. But anyway, maybe have a look at that episode if you're keen to know more about wallets. But yeah, that's a really good point about testnet, or even just putting small amounts in, $10, have a bit of an experiment. It's your $10 learning Bitcoin. Even if you lose it all, it's worthwhile in the long run. And you very unlikely will actually lose it all either.
Yeah. And the fee at the moment, the fees are pretty low. You know, like, you can get a transaction for 20 cents or something. So it's worth paying that. The software itself is free. The wallet software is free. So there's no cost to download those. And yeah, I mean, what the other thing we haven't talked about is transaction fees. Like, if the world does decide that they need self-custody assets and there's no gold and silver to buy, what's that going to do to transaction fees?
Very true. I'd say it would get very congested, at least initially, and push the transaction fee price up, which again is a good reason to plan and take action now rather than wait for that. Any final points before we kind of cap this off?
I think I'm probably sounding like a broken record. I keep saying this, but yeah, just take the first step to be prepared. You know, you talked about how, you know, we've never seen this type of thing in our lifetime. But if you read books, you know, in the history of, you know, the storytellers of books, you know, you look back 100 years, 200 years, or just looking at the countries around the world now, it's not unusual for this type of thing to happen. And if you look at the fundamentals of the situation, it's very precarious, the way that the banks are set up, the way that the gold exchanges are set up. And I think I've said this before, but normally when you buy insurance on your house, you pay money and you never use it. It actually costs you money to have insurance. This is a rare time where having insurance in the form of hard money is actually going to make you money while being insured at the same time. So the only thing that is kind of stopping you is just spending the time learning how to do it.
And it's a really good way to see Bitcoin. I know Greg Foss uses that analogy a lot, where Bitcoin is an insurance policy. It's an insurance policy on chaos and volatility and economic collapse. It's an insurance policy on inflation. It's an insurance policy on, a debt default. It's many, many things. And so, consider it and try to take some action now, or at least look into it. If there's ever any queries, we're always available. We're happy to help. You can send us an email. Our information is on the hardblock.com.au website. You can contact us on Twitter as well, which is hardblockbtc, or one word. Always happy to talk about this sort of stuff and, to help you out, get started. We might as well end it there. Even though it sounds all doom and gloom, there's much hope for the future, I believe. And there's a lot of options as well. This is the thing. It's just a lot of us, you know, perhaps weren't aware of the options until, you know, doing more research in this area. But, you know, I'm really hopeful for the future, and I'm hopeful for the kind of the exit ramps that we now have. But it takes the time to research and get into it.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thanks for your time, Jeremy.
No worries.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. If you like this or you think it's going to be useful for someone, then please share it around. If you've got any other comments or queries or any content requests, then again, reach out to us on Twitter, HardBlockBTC, all one word, HardBlockBTC. Otherwise, thanks for listening, and until next time.